And to think of taking the men away. At least Rodri's left me a good man to captain the band. With a sigh, Levine sat up on the bed and ran her hands through her tangled hair. She had wept enough for one day. In spite of the pain she felt over Rodri's exile, she had to pick up the broken pieces of her plans and make new ones.
Dan, would you get a servant to fetch me hot water? Levine said. I'll have a wash and dress now. I must have a word with the Guerbret.
So soon? Is my lady sure that's wise?
Not wise at all, but necessary.
Yet in the end, Rhys came to her. Levine had just finished dressing when a page appeared to ask if she would receive the Guerbret. Levine took a place by the window and drew herself up to full height as Rhys came in. He looked so timid that Levine suddenly remembered that there was something he very badly wanted from her.
Mother, my apologies. Truly I never meant to send Rodri away or to hang him either. I was honestly glad when his captain reminded me of my promise. Don't you see? After he stood there and defied me in open Malover, what could I do? Knuckle under and be shamed in every man's eyes?
Levine wished that she could believe him. In time, perhaps, she would be able to make herself believe him.
Mother, please. I'd already shamed myself once by admitting my fault there in the Malover.
I have no doubt that His Grace perceived his choice that way. I have hopes that he will see a better choice at some future time.
I suppose you want me to recall him.
Does His Grace truly have to ask me that?
With a toss of his head, Rhys began pacing back and forth. Levine considered refusing to make the marriage for Danila unless Rhys recalled his brother, but she knew him too well. In angry pride, he would refuse the bargain, and then Danila would suffer for her husband's fault.
"I wish to leave your court on the morrow," Levine said. "If Danila's going to ride with us, you'll have to drink the bitter ale and put her aside. It's only hurting both of you by delaying it anyway."
"My thanks."
Rhys turned to her in honest relief.
"I was afraid that you'd..."
He could not quite bring himself to finish. She let the silence build until he looked down, shamed by her generosity.
"Mother, please, won't you accept my apology?"
"Mother, never call me that again."
Rhys flinched as if she'd slapped him. She paused just long enough for him to feel the sting.
"Not at least until Rodri's back home."
Rhys started to speak, then turned and strode out, slamming the door so hard that the silver oddments on the mantel rattled. Levine allowed herself a small smile.
"I am a warrior's wife and a warrior's daughter, and the war, Your Grace, has just begun."
The sun was low in the sky when Rhodri came to the stone slab marking the border between the Guerbret Rhynau of Aberwyn and Abernawth. He paused his horse and contemplated the dragon carved on the west side and the hippogriff rampant carved on the east, then rode the last few feet across. For all the good it was going to do him, he was safe. Rhys's men would never risk starting a war by pursuing him into another Guerbret ran, and thus usurping that Guerbret's jurisdiction. As the evening wind picked up from the sea, he shivered and pulled his plain blue cloak round his shoulders. His stomach was growling and knotting. He hadn't eaten since the ill-fetted feast of the night before. A few more miles brought him to a big farming village and the Grey Goat Tavern, a thatched roundhouse with a stable out in back. As he dismounted, the taverner came out, a bulky blob of a man who reeked of garlic. He looked Rodri over with a shrewd eye, for the blazons on his shirt and worn spot on his belt where a scabbard should have hung.
"I'll wager you got into a bit of trouble with the captain of your war band."
"What's it to you?" "Naught. And a silver dagger in your belt, is there? Who pledged you to that?" "Cullen of Caermore." "Oh-ho!"
The taverner gave him a wide grin, revealing stubs of front teeth.
"Then come in and welcome. You can work around the place like to earn your keep while you figure out what you're going to do next. Here, lad, have you been flogged? My wife can give you a poultice of summat for your back."
"I haven't, but my thanks."
"Good, good. At least your lord was a merciful man, eh? Well, put your horse in the stables. My name's Gath."
"And mine's Rodri."
Just in time, he stopped himself from calling himself Lord Rodri Mailwith. That he only had part of his name left gave him a cold feeling, but at the same time he was relieved at Gath's easy assumption that he was a disgraced rider. Outside of Rhys's Gwerbrethian, no one but the noble lords would know who he was, and once he left Eldith, few of them would recognize him either. Without his name and his plaid, he would only be another silver dagger. Apparently, Gath had a higher opinion of horses than he did humans, because while the stable was clean and well-tended, in the tavern room the battered tables were slick with grease, and the straw on the floor smelled like kennel bedding. The stew, however, that Gath put in front of Rodri was thick with meat and turnips, and the bread that went with it was fresh-baked. Rodri gobbled, while Gath brought him a tankard of dark ale and pointed out where the open barrel stood.
"Dip out what you want. No doubt you'll be drinking yourself blind tonight. Just do your puking out in the stable-yard."
Yet Rodri stayed reasonably sober. As the place filled up with local farmers and their wives, he saw them watching him with the hungry curiosity of those to whom a fallen tree is a village event. Even though Gath told everyone to leave him alone, Rodri felt as vulnerable as if he were walking naked through city streets. He nursed a couple of tankards and huddled by the warmth of the hearth while he wondered if Cullen truly would be able to get him some coin and a sword. Without a weapon, he couldn't fight, silver dagger or no. The irony struck him hard. Before, he'd been the great lord, able to load Cullen with honours. Now, if he stayed alive, it would be only because Cullen had befriended him. Out on the long road, Cullen's name meant as much as Maelwith did in the world he'd irrevocably left behind. Rodri had no hope at all that Rhys would ever recall him. The more their mother pressured him, the more stubborn Rhys would become. Rodri was sure of it, and with good reason. If he'd been the Gwerbret and Rhys the exile, he never would have relented. Locked in their hatred, he and Rhys shared a core where they were twins, not merely brothers, and when they reached that core, they understood each other better than anyone else in the world could ever do. No matter how much his kin schemed and begged, Rodri would live and die a silver dagger. He knew it there, in that core. Idly, he pulled the dagger from his belt to look at Cullen's device. At his touch, the blade ran with silvery light. He sheathed it fast and glanced around, but fortunately no one had noticed.
"You're worse than just an exile," Rodri told himself. "You're half an elf, too."
All at once he felt dizzy, just from seeing that he no longer fit anywhere in his world, not among the West Folk, not among men, a half-breed with no clan, no rank, no place to call home, nothing but the silver dagger to give him the identity he'd always taken for granted. He laid his hand on the dagger's hilt and understood why, scum of the kingdom that they were, silver daggers clung to their name and their band. He got up and dipped himself out another tankard, drank it fast, and went out to the hayloft over the stable. He had never wanted anything as much as he wanted simply to go to sleep and wipe the world away. Yet he had a restless night of it because he was cold, he had no blankets, he was too proud to ask Gath for some, and the chill autumn night had driven away the false summer warmth of the day. He wrapped himself in his cloak, burrowed into the straw like a dog in a kennel, but every time he drowsed off he would wake shivering. Finally, he sat up to ease the cramps in his back and wondered if he could stand the stink of his saddle blanket. It was small, but it would be something. Then he heard a horse trotting into the stable-yard. Since it was highly unusual for anyone to travel at night, he hoped that this traveller was Cullen's messenger, sent to him as fast as possible to make sure that Rhys never knew. His mind mostly on warm blankets, Rodri climbed down the ladder and hurried out into the moonlight. He recognised the horse before he did the rider, who was just dismounting. Sunrise tossed a weary head and nickered in greeting.
"There you are, my love," Jill said. "I've got your sword. Dar and Lord Sliggan bribed the guards, and we nipped it out right under your stinking brother's nose."
In sheer disbelief, Rodri stood stock still. He was sure that he was having a desperate dream and nothing more, until Jill walked over and laid her hands on his chest. They were solid and warm.
"Oh, here. Did you think I'd let you go into exile and not follow?"
"I did. Forgive me. You'd even leave your father for me."
"I would."
She went tense and he could hear tears under her words.
but it's hard. I won't lie and say otherwise. But I had to go. And oh, ye gods, Roddo, I love you so much.
Rodri threw his arms around her and kissed her. Tight in each other's arms, they laughed and wept by turns, until a grumbling Gath ran out to see who was making all that noise in his stable yard. Since Lord Petin, the cousin who was sheltering Lavian's men, paid direct fealty to Gwerbret Rhys, there was no doubt that it was awkward for him to have the Ku Klux warband under his roof. Just at dawn, Cullen woke the men, got them fed, and told them to start saddling their horses so they could meet their lady on the road and spare Petin the further sight of them. He was just finishing with his own horse when a worried-looking Nevin jogged over to him.
"Cullen, where's Jill? I can't find her anywhere."
"No doubt. She rode out last night to follow her Rodri."
Nevin froze, staring at him open-mouthed.
"You let her go," the old man said at last.
"And what choice did I have? She could have sneaked off like a thief, but she paid me the honour of coming to me and telling me the truth."
Afraid that he would weep, he busied himself with adjusting the bridle, which needed no adjustment.
"Besides, the lad needs her. He's never ridden anywhere without a pack of servants. Do you think he could even tell Greenwood from Dry if he wanted a fire?"
"Doubtless not, truly. You know, my friend, you're a cursed strong man."
"I'm not. Just one who knows enough to send his weakness far away from him."
When he risked a look, he found the old man smiling in a friendly kind of disbelief. He was surprised at how much having Nevin's honour meant to him.
"I've had one of the lads ready your horse. We'll be riding soon."
"My thanks. But would you mind if I rode after Jill? I want to say farewell to her."
"Mind? Not in the least. And besides, it's not for me to say any more what she does or doesn't do."
Cullen escorted Nevin down to the gates and held the bridle of his horse while the old man swung into the saddle.
"Tell Lady Lavian that I'll return to Dungwerbin soon," Nevin said. "If naught else, I have to claim my mule and my herbs."
"Done, then. I'll look forward to seeing you there."
"Will you now?"
Nevin shot him another smile.
"And I'll look forward to seeing you. Do you have any message for your silver dagger of a daughter?"
"Naught. I told her I love her last night. There's naught else to be said."
Cullen leaned back against the wall and watched him ride off into the brightening dawn. He felt himself trembling like a beggar in the snow.
"Jill, oh ye gods, Jill, Jill, Jill."
Yet now she would never learn of his shame, never have to know that he'd been tempted to dishonour them both. Cullen was smiling as he walked back into the ward, where his men were waiting for him. Since Nevin often stayed in the Grey Goat when he was doctoring the local farmers, Gath knew him well. When he rode up that evening, Gath waddled out all smiles and bows to take his horse for him.
"What? No mule? You haven't given up herbcraft, have you?"
"I haven't. I'm just here to look for someone. A young silver dagger and Cullen of Caermore's lass. Which way did they ride when they left you?"
"Left me? Ha! They've been up in my hayloft all day, they have. Ha! Young lads. A man just doesn't have that kind of stamina when he gets on in years."
Gath shook his head mournfully.
"It's a cursed good thing that custom's slow this time of year."
"I see your point, truly. Well, I'll wait in the tavern until they get hungry enough to come down."
Nevin was just settling down to a bowl of Gath's good stew when Jill walked into the smoky firelight of the tavern. As tense as a hunted deer, she paused just inside the door and watched him warily.
"Have you come to fetch me back? You'll have to ensorcel me or such like to do it. Maybe Rodri's an exile and a dishonoured man, but I'd follow him anywhere."
It stabbed like fire, remembering the time when she'd said those same words about Prince Gowrion.
"But she's no longer Branwyn," Nevin reminded himself. "And cursed if you're going to plague a rent."
"I know you would, child, and it's your choice. I only wanted to bid you farewell. But would it ache your heart if our roads crossed again? I might find myself wandering the same way you wander at times."
"Ache my heart? What? Never. Here, what would ache my heart would be never seeing you again."
and she ran to him and hugged him. For a moment he stood as stiff as a sword blade with surprise, then he gave her a grandfatherly pat on the head.
"Then we'll meet again. I'll promise you that."
"Splendid."
Jill spoke so sincerely that Nevin felt his hope flare. She liked him, she trusted him, and some day he would make her see where her true weird lay. After all, by following Rodri, she'd set herself free for the Dwayomer. No longer would she be caught and buried by the intrigues of a powerful court, and the dangers of an unsettled life would keep her latent talents alive. He thought of broaching the subject of her Dwayomer talent then and there, but the time was still unripe. She would only react with panic this soon after having seen the Dwayomer gone mad and turned to evil ends. He would have to wait. But by letting her go, he was not losing, but keeping her. As they were sitting back down at Nevin's table, Rodri came in. With his sword at his side, he strode over as if he were still a lord, but Nevin could see the change in his eyes, so haunted and weary that he seemed to have aged several years.
"I think I owe you my life," Rodri said.
"Because of Rhys's men yesterday, you mean? Well, indeed, I had a hand in that. Ha! No doubt your brother would have wept and wrung his hands when your body was found, at least in public."
"No doubt, the piss-proud drunken sot."
Rodri sat down next to Jill.
"Well, good sir, it looks like Eldith will have to work out her weird with no help from me."
"Perhaps so. We'll have to see what the gods have in store."
While they ate, mostly in silence, Nevin pondered what the Great Ones might want done, now that the lad had been sent away from the province he was born to serve. He also wondered whether Rodri were in danger. Now that he no longer held political power, he might well be of no further interest to the Dark Dwayomer, but the hope seemed an idle one. Yet, as he considered the problem, not one single Dwayomer warning came to him, only the generalized and normal fear that silver daggers, after all, often died young in battle. The lack of warnings made it plain that at least for now, Rodri was in no danger from the masters of the Black Craft. It would be safe then for Nevin to let them go on their way, and to keep watch from a distance while he tried to influence Rhys to recall the exile.
"You know, Nevin," Rodri said finally, "I'm cursed lucky that Jill loves me so much, or I'd have died soon enough on the long road."
"Oh, hogwash," Jill broke in. "You're not a half-wit. You would have learned how to fend for yourself."
"That's not what I mean."
Rodri's voice went cold and flat.
"In every battle I rode, I would have been volunteering for the point of the charge, or riding into the worst mob. There's more than one way for a man to end his exile."
It was a confession, quietly said. Jill grabbed his arm.
"But not now," he went on. "Not when I've got you to live for."
Jill flung her arms around his neck and kissed him. Nevin sighed aloud at the irony of it, that by keeping Rodri alive, Jill was already serving the Dwayomer, though she knew it not. The next morning, Jill woke just at dawn and found Rodri's arms tightly round her. Grey light filtered in through the cracks in the stable walls, and the sound of rain drummed on the roof. She rested her hand on Rodri's chest and listened to the rain song mingling with his steady breathing, while she smiled at herself for finding Gath's hayloft more to her taste than her feather bed back in Dungwerbin. When she thought of Cullen, she had to close her eyes tight to force back her tears.
Da, I'm sorry, she thought, but you know I had to go.
At least she'd left him in a safe place, where he'd never have to sleep in the rain again, no matter what happened to her. Bitterly she wondered if she would ever see him again, but she had made her choice, and she would follow Rodri forever if the gods allowed. And the gods could do what they wanted, she decided. She'd always lived a single day at a time, simply because she'd never had any choice but to live that way. "The long road stretches into mist," Cullen always said, "and no one can see the end of it." She had Rodri, and her freedom to ride. As she fell back to sleep, she decided that they would do splendidly for now. This concludes Daggerspell by Catherine Kerr. Narrated by Ruth Urquhart. Copyright 1986 by Catherine Kerr. Revised edition copyright, 1993, by Catherine Kerr. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Catherine Kerr, care of Elizabeth Pomada Literary Agents, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.